From the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies, this is Pardes from Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This is a special podcast for Pesach. Our thanks to Bob Karazoff and Hannah Bloomfield for sponsoring the podcast in honor of their children. Thank you very much. This Pesach podcast is only one of a number of resources for you about Pesach from Pardes. You can check out all of the resources that are available for download from our electronic learning site. That's elmad.pardes.org, elmad.pardes.org. Check it out. This is a special podcast for Pesach with Rabbi Mike Foyer. Rabbi Mike Foyer is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Mike Foyer.
Motzei Shabbat, Rosh Chodesh, Nisan, Malava Malka, and Shavua Tov to everybody. And I hope, wherever you are listening to this, you're making good progress in all that labor Am Yisrael loves to do in the lead-up to the Pesach holiday. And just in case you're feeling a little bit of slavery, I want to remind you that the mitzvot lo ta'aseh, the negative commandments of Pesach, all that hard work of getting the chametz out, tend to get a lot of attention. And perhaps a little bit too much at times. Just remember, your children aren't slaves, and you don't have to be the Korban Pesach just to make it to Seder. And as much as I support you and the rest of Am Yisrael in letting loose all of our pathos on the grit between the floor tiles, it's critical to remember that the mitzvot aseh, the positive commandments of Pesach, are from the Torah too, and therefore deserve just as much labor. Now, by the Rambam's count, there are 8 mitzvot in the laws of chametz u'matzah, of matzah and chametz. How do you translate that? 5 do's and 3 don'ts. 5 don'ts and 3 do's. One of the do's properly belongs to the don'ts, and that's why I got confused, as it's actually a positive expression of the isur, of the prohibition against eating chametz. Do get it out of your house by the 14th of Nisan, or Tu B'Shvat if you want to be strict. But that leaves us, when you switch sides with that one, with a quarter of the mitzvot to do. And the first one that the Rambam lists is Ba'erev tochlu matzot. Right? Eat matzah on this night. And we're not really going to focus on it right now. But you can take it away for homework or a fun Seder discussion. That this eating of the matzah is the last act of commanded consumption which the Jews do. And don't forget, in case you think that's just a strange fact, such actions were once the foundation of Israelite life. So that moment of silent, intensive crunching around the Seder table is our last vehicle for everything that such an experience might offer in spiritual practice. Don't miss it. Now, of course, the Rambam, when he gives his count, leaves out the main course of the Seder, so to speak, the Korban Pesach, because the laws of Chametz and Matzah are about Pesach as we actually practice it today. But that sacred eating of the flesh is still, to a certain degree, the topography on which our Seder is built. So you can chew on that idea while you scrub the light fixtures. Meanwhile, the other positive commandment is what I want to talk about, and that's the one in which the Rambam tells us it is a mitzvah commandment to tell the story of the Exodus. Mitzvot aseh, says the Rambam in the Laws of Chametz Matzah, Chapter 7, Halacha 1, Mitzvah aseh shel Torah lesaper benisim v'niflaot shenasu la'avoteinu b'mitzrayim b'leil chamishar b'nisan. Right? It is a positive commandment to tell the stories of the miracles and wonders that happened to our ancestors in Egypt on the 15th night of Nisan. Now, he also goes on to tell us that this obligation is a fulfillment of an actual commandment to remember. Because the verse he brings is Vayomer Moshe el ha'am, Zechor et yom hazeh Asher yatzata mimitzrayim mibet avadim ki bechozak yad hotzi Adonai etchem mizeh velo yachel chametz. You've got to remember this day. And so what we need to clarify is why the Rambam sees the primary demand of the Torah as to remember, and the vehicle of that is telling the story. And of course, it is worth noting that the verse on which he locates the command to remember the Exodus is actually spoken in the process of Israel leaving Egypt, and we'll come back to that. Now, we also have to distinguish between this commandment to remember on the 15th of Nisan and the twice daily obligation of remembering the Exodus from Egypt that's bound up with the saying of the Shema. And there, in the laws of Kriyat Shema, Chapter 1, Halacha 3, the Rambam says, Mitzvah lahazkir yitziat Mitzrayim biyom uvalayla, shenema alman tizgo et yom tzeit chametz Mitzrayim kol yemei chayecha. Now, he says, it's a mitzvah to recall the going out from Egypt, day and night, as it says, right? In order to remember the day that you went out from Egypt all the days of your lives. And the essence of the mitzvah appears the same, to remember. And if we wanted, we could probably take a fruitful tangent to discuss why the obligatory act in the case of Shema is actually lahazkir, which is the verb in hifil, the causative, and what that could teach us about the relationship between twice daily disciplined action and memory. But you're going to have to think about it on your own, because we're going to stay focused on the Seder. So the Rambam tells us, here in the laws of Chametz and Matzah, that we're obligated to tell a story of miracles and wonders on this night, and that it's a fulfillment of the command to remember. And it's a specific type of memory, because when it comes to saying the Shema, we also remember, but in a radically different way. So that kind of leads me to say that memory is a funny thing. And always remember, or at least never forget, that the two strangest phenomena wrapped up with memory are, first, you don't recall everything, which honestly is a great blessing, but it begs a deep question about why we remember what we do. And not only that, the second is that even what we remember is not exactly an accurate representation of past events. I'm sure we've all had the experience, a friend or a loved one, a family member saying, oh, do you remember when? And they said to us, that's not how I remember it. And that's because memory by nature is an interpretive process. Right? In human experience, there is no recall of what happened in the past in the computer sense of accessing information. And that's because our memory, despite the fact that it's about the past, is actually located in the present. And because of that, the events that we're remembering are forever inaccessible in and of themselves. They're in the past. So when we remember, what we're doing is attempting to connect who we are now to what we once did or to who we were. In the deepest sense, memory is our chief tool for telling a story of the past which fits into our present identity. Now, that reality raises a number of troubling questions, not the least of which is, well, where does the truth of reality lie? I mean, the events of my life really happened, right? And so does the ongoing interpretation of those events through memory. Now, I want you to try something right now. Take a second and think of something that happened at least 5 years ago. Something that after it happened, you said, wow, nothing will ever be the same. Take a second. And now ask yourself, at least 5 years later, do you understand that event in the same way now as you did when it happened? I'm guessing that it's unlikely. And there's, of course, another problem that flows from this discontinuity between experience and memory as an interpretive act, which is, well, how do we relate to the present? I mean, as the experiences of life come in us, they're as intense, as real as they can be, well, I hope. And often, we can't possibly grasp them in their depths as they're happening, certainly not the events that we experience as life-changing. You know, this is what Wallace Stegner, the great American Western author, called the Doppler effect of time. Right? The Doppler effect is why the ambulance siren goes up as it approaches you and down while it passes. He says that life seems to compress and go up a notch or two as it comes after us, and then stretch out behind as we pass it. And maybe that's why the verse that the Rambam cited as the source of our obligation to remember the story on this night was actually spoken to the children of Israel while they were in the midst of leaving. They're literally between Egypt and the sea. And they're being asked, as this is all happening, to remember. God's tipping them off to the fact that what's happening matters so much that you won't possibly understand it for another 3,000 years. And that tension between where meaning lies in the event or our subsequent understanding is also the fruitful tension which underlies the relationship between Devarim and the four other books of the Torah. Now, the first four are a narrative, remember. In the beginning, there's creation. We go through the whole family thing, down into Egypt, out, round around in the desert, and then we halt at the River Jordan at the beginning of the book of Devarim, and Moshe starts to talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. And don't forget, he's not just talking, he's telling a story, and he's telling a story about things that you already know. You don't just know, you live them. Right? Remember, if you were 19 at Har Sinai At Mount Sinai, you're standing there on the banks of the Jordan River, listening to Moshe's parting speech. And so he's telling you stories you already know, stories you've actually experienced. And he's doing so in a way which differs significantly, at least of the record, of how it all went down. Now, that's because there on the edge of the Jordan, at the boundary of exile, Moshe isn't actually telling us what happened in the past. He's telling us how we need to remember it in order to move forward into the future. And why is he doing it now? Well, because even though memory is located in the present, I got a secret for you. You hear that? You know what it was? There it goes again. That's the present. And if you've ever done any mindfulness work, you know how difficult it is to be present to the present. Because in reality, we live in a tension. It's a tension between memory of what was and aspiration for what will be, or anxiety, depending on which side of the bed you got up on. So in reality, memory, in its full sense, is a process of telling a story of the past that builds an identity in the present, which is oriented toward the future of which we dream. And again, the tension between the event and the interpretation, the story and the retelling, is the roots of what we call the oral Torah, actually, in the book of Devarim. It's a constant reinterpretation of a meaningful event. And of course, it's one of the key structural elements of the Haggadah. Tse'u lamed, go out and do some looking, that the dialogue between the going out in Shemot in real time, so to speak, and its first memories in the retelling of Devarim actually takes quite a role in the Haggadah. So, memory as an act of construction through reconstruction, of building the future by retelling the story of the past, is at the root of the commandment of telling the story on Seder night. And in case you want to know actually what the Rambam meant by memory, aside from my own strange notion, fortunately, he actually tells us, because after he gives us the mitzvah and identifies it as to remember, he says, "Kemo she'nemar," just as it says, "Zechor et yom ha-shabbat," remember the Sabbath day. Now, I'm not a Rambam expert, but I'm familiar enough to know that it's not so often that he defines his terms, and he's doing us a great favor. Because, first of all, we can dismiss any notion of memory here as a recollection of the actual past. None of us there at the seventh day of the creation any more than we were there at the going out from Egypt. Though there is an important element of a real act of recollection, remembering that such a thing once was, and that we do so every week. But in terms of how one actually does this type of memory on the 15th of Nisan on Seder night, we can know exactly what the Rambam meant. Because we follow his trail back to the laws of Shabbat, he says, "Mitzvah aseh min haTorah." It's a Torah-level commandment, "L'kadesh et yom haShabbat b'dvarim," to sanctify the Sabbath day with words. And then he says, "Shenamar," with our pasuk, "Zechor et yom haShabbat l'kadesh," remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. So it's reasonable to say that in our halacha, in the laws of Pesach, what the Rambam means is very specific. When I said remember, I mean talk about it. That's what he's saying. But there's still a problem. Because if it's just a matter of talking about it, how is it fundamentally different than the twice daily memory that we already mentioned in relationship to Shema? I mean, when we say the third paragraph of the Shema twice a day, which is the fulfillment of that mitzvah, we're also talking about God taking us out. What's the difference here? And I think that the answer actually lies in the second half of the halacha, where the Rambam makes it clear why this night is different than any other night. Because this night is when you got to hook the kids. He goes on, "Uminayin shebeleil chamishasar," and how do I know that there's a particular obligation on the night of the 15th, Seder night? Right? "Tamud lomar," the Torah says, "v'igadata levincha bayom ha-hu," and you should tell it to your children on that day. Okay, very clear. But how do we do it? That's really the question we all want to know, and this is where the work comes in, just like you're scrubbing the floorboards right now. How do we tell a story over and over each year and make it live, real, compelling, and not just what we did last year? Now, fortunately, the Rambam gives us a hint on how to make memories. Because the verse he's quoting actually says in full, and it's Exodus 13:8, "V'igadta levincha b'yom ha'hu le'mor, b'avur zeh asa Adonai li b'tzeiti mimitzrayim." Right? And you should tell it to your children on that day, saying, "It's for the sake of that which God did to me when I went out from Egypt." Now, the first person makes perfect sense in the book of Shmot, because as we said, the person hearing it is getting the command in real time, and how else would they tell the story other than in the third person? And as I said, the fact that this command comes literally between Egypt and the sea tells us that the Israelites were being told or commanded to experience the Exodus not just as a world-changing event, but as a memory to be cherished and passed on. But of course, by the time Devarim rolls around, it's a whole new generation. Whose first-person experience are they being commanded to retell? Now, if you want to go deeper in that, just as an aside for bonus work, go look on the source sheet at the Rashi on Bamidbar 9:1, where he says that the children of Israel only actually marked one Seder in the whole 40 years of the wilderness. That means there was one in Egypt and one more, and that's it until they crossed the Jordan. But for our purposes now in the Rambam, what's striking is that his source text is in the first person. Meaning, on the surface of it, in order to fulfill the mitzvah, I actually have to be telling the story in the first person. Or, as another way of looking at it, in order to make memories for my children, the Higad de Levincha, I have to have them for myself. And lacking the real experience of the Exodus, I have to hang the story on the experience of something. And so, an amazing feat, the Rambam reworks the original verse from a first-person experience of the past into an experiential, educational approach to the present. Look at the way he wrote it. Tamud lomar v'yigdata levincha b'yom ahu. So far, that's the same as the pasuk. Le'mo bavu zeh. We're still good because of this pointing. Now, instead of entering it, asa Hashem li b'tzeiti Mitzrayim, like the verse does, he ends it as bavur zeh b'sha'a sheyes matza umara munachim lefanecha. At the moment when you have matzah and bitter herbs placed on the table in front of you, you're having a first-person experience of the present, right here and now. And everybody knows that the whole purpose of the games, the prop, the costumes, Seder, bingo, dancing children, who knows what, of the whole strange structure of the Haggadah is to evoke that most precious event, the question of a child. Now, why did you do that? What does this mean? And there's nothing better than the eager curiosity of a child to make an experience memorable. And what if, says the Rambam, we lack children at the Seder table? Or what if our own inner child, that freedom to see the world in the future as wide open, has fallen prey to cynicism, exhaustion, pain? Well, finishes the Rambam, tonight is still a night to remember. Even though you have no son or no child left, afilu chachamim gedolim, everybody, no matter how wise you are in your own eyes, you're obligated to tell this story. And everybody who goes on and on about it is praiseworthy. And sometimes it takes props or even a few glasses of wine. But we can all tell a story of the past, which will awaken our children, ourselves, in the present, and that will energize that part of ourselves which is motivated and energized to build the future of which we dream. So, L'shana haba'ah b'Yerushalayim habnuya, next year in a rebuilt Jerusalem, of all our prayers and dreams. Chag Sameach.
Thank you, Rabbi Foyer. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.